Welcome everyone back to another episode of Aura Talks. We are currently at episode 9, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Bea, the original Aura team member, as well as Paulette and Vikram, who are very active members of the Aurable community. So Vikram spends a lot of time facilitating various meetings in Aurable, whereas Paulette dedicates a lot of her time to writing about the teachings of the mother and Sri Aurobindo, as well as taking photos of Macha Mandir and other Aurable subjects. So I'm very grateful to have all of you on today's call to dive into the topic of the impact that the outbreak of COVID-19 has had on the Aurable community, and also to discuss the potential reforms that we might see in the community as a result of the outbreak. So Paulette and Vikram, before we get deeper into the conversation, could you give a short self-introduction? When did you come to Aurable, and what made you decide to join the community? So let's start with Paulette.
So in fact, I didn't come to Auroville. I came to the Sri Aurobindo Ashram in 1973. And in a very special way, I came because of the what I call the revolutionary Sri Aurobindo. Because I was myself an extreme left activist. And even now, I know that I could never add any other guru except Sri Aurobindo, because he's the only one who has this complete vision. So for 1.5 years, for me, there was only Sri Aurobindo. I didn't want to know anything about the mother. Then suddenly I open up, but I open up because at the playground she was reading on Auroville. And this is when I decided to go to Auroville. It took me 8 years, but the Auroville that the mother describes is the ideal society that I have always been dreaming of, and my family and my husband and my friends and my teachers. So personally, I don't understand why we are not making this Auroville.
Step by step.
This was my way, but it took me 8 years to move, because at the same time I was very attached to the early great sadhaks, because the path of integral yoga for me was also very strong. So the two things were coming together. Yeah. And in the meantime, I started working at Matri Mandir. So I was cycling from Pondi and going working at Matri Mandir on the roof, on the scaffolding. And then when I came back from Canada and I had a daughter, I was cycling with the daughter, or leaving the daughter with the Nirodharam family and going working at Matri Mandir. And this is when finally I decided to move to Auroville. But for me, Auroville was dead. The pioneers working at Matri Mandir, the people who live at the camp, with the minimum needs. Then I was going back to the ashram and I was feeling pampered. I don't know, feeling that there was something wasted living like this, that the real thing was out of it, because those people live really with nothing and work hard.
Yeah. Well, I would love to. I've seen some archival photos of the pioneering days, and honestly, it looks very surreal for me, because I obviously came to Aurable at a much later stage when things were really prosperous, especially in terms of the forest and the greenery, also the infrastructure. So thank you to Paulette and Bea for all your hard, sweat, blood and tear, I guess. There must have been so much that went into it. Vikram, so how was your story, Vikram? So when did you come to Aurable first, and how did you join the community?
21 years back, I came to the ashram. And then 14 years back, roughly, I first came to Auroville. After that, there was not any, I didn't have so much intellect or any spiritual understanding of many things. I was very, very new, and but I was always, something about the mother was very strong for me. Today, after being here for close to 15 years, it has boiled down to only her. Everything else doesn't matter at all. It's only her. Rest, I'm okay in any condition, whatever the circumstances are. Other than that, I don't remember so much. It was a long time back. Things are a bit hazy also. I'm still trying to be an Aurobindian. A lot of mistakes are there. Lots of difficulties are there inside me and around me. But I'm trying my best somehow to do volunteer in a few places and be of use. Nothing much.
And the mother happens to be right there, like right by your side during this conversation. So how symbolic. Thank you for the short self-introduction. Let's just dive right into the topic of the outbreak of COVID-19. So I want to provide a little background to our audience members. So Paulette was recently commissioned by the Science Walden Center, who is supporting and collaborating on this Aura project. So she was commissioned to write bi-weekly reports, or like monthly to bi-weekly reports, about the most relevant developments regarding crisis relief, economic development, and general community-wide efforts regarding the outbreak of COVID-19. So when I first heard from Professor Zhou and Dr. Che that they were interested in this line of research, I was very pleased because this is a very historical moment that we're seeing, and it's being recorded so meticulously by none other than Paulette, who happens to be an excellent writer. And I really do hope that these reports that hopefully can be refined and condensed into a book will help others in the future to understand better how Oroville, as an intentional community, went about dealing with this global crisis that we're seeing. So Paulette, I wanted, so you've been immersed in this research for the past few months now. So what are your personal thoughts on the impact that the outbreak of COVID-19 has had on the community so far?
It's very, very difficult to give a straight judgment or whatever, because even to understand Auroville is very difficult. In fact, in order to understand Auroville, one has to be familiar with integral yoga. So that is the work of the avatar, is not just a guru. The work of the avatar is the ideal society. So society is composed by all possible sort of people. And the integral yoga is like this. And then you have the same thing in Auroville. So whether the people are aware or not, this diversity has to be there. And so even the reaction to COVID-19 is extremely different. It just depends on the people. There are people who don't take it seriously at all. There are people who are into conspiracy theories. There are others who take Auroville is really a, I don't know. You see humanity as it is, the good, the bad, everything there. But those who are in charge of the community, and of course the other are always fighting against and so on, but those who are in charge of the community are taking the things very seriously. And in fact, it's something exhausting, this kind of communicate and meeting all the time the authorities. And on top, there are three authorities every time. So you have the central government, then you have the Tamil Nadu government, then you have the Pondicherry government. They have to make a synthesis of all this, come up with guidelines which suits everybody. And then there are people in the community who are very happy and very grateful for this kind of work, and other who don't accept. But it's the same thing happened all over the world. So the point, but I think this will be another question, the point is how we are going to come out from this.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the most interesting topic for sure. What are some of your thoughts be on just in terms of the general impact that you've seen so far that the outbreak has had on the community? So obviously Oroville is not directly affected yet. We don't have any reported cases of COVID-19 within the community yet. But how has it been just this news and this worldwide global crisis? Because it's everyone is talking about this right now, or has been for the past few months. So how has it been in Oroville, Bea?
Well, actually, for most people, it's been very good, I would say, because we have a rather ideal setup, because we're in the countryside and we have no cases. But as Paulette said, the people in charge of Oroville and the government officials have taken the situation very seriously and implemented the guidelines strictly. So we've had the lockdown. So the immediate impact of that was to have all the employees not coming to work. So when you consider a community of Oroville, which is only about 3,000 members, yes, as a workforce of about 7,000, they don't show up. So then this means a lot of rearrangement, a lot of things start happening. So it did happen like that. And then there's the food to be organized. There are essential services that have to be carried on. So all of this shook up the community, I think, in good ways. People reevaluated what they were doing. They had some more time to reflect, some people. And some people were, of course, overworked because they were in the essential services. And I happen to be very fortunate to be able to work in the eco service, which is collecting the trash, one of my favorite things. Yeah. So it worked out really well for me. I could continue working and enjoying what was happening. But for some people, it was difficult.
I can imagine. I mean, I think I would just like to refer back to what Paulette said, that Oroville is, it's just that diversity is the first attribute you would give to Oroville, right?
It's 6 o'clock.
And so basically, even when we're talking about the reaction or the perception of COVID-19, it only makes sense that we have a diverse range of people acting in different ways, or I mean, taking it in different various degrees, like in terms of how seriously they perceive the situation to be. I would like to ask you, Vikram, so it's been very interesting for me to be in Europe for the past few months. Because the funny thing about the European continent is that it's considered worldwide to be the most stable continent in the world in terms of how modern and how prospered it is, economically at least. And that for the first time in a long time, you saw countries like Italy, for example, and countries like France, countries like Spain, as well as Germany getting so badly hit from this, and that they were also quite ill prepared in terms of the healthcare. So then that led to a very strict lockdown where people were not allowed to leave their homes. And this atmosphere was really eerie. Walking on the streets, let's say of Munich, where I'm currently based, it felt like a dystopian, like a apocalyptic setting. It was very, like, honestly, like from a social conscious level, it felt social atmosphere level, it felt very, very scary for me personally, because I had never experienced something like that. It felt like an abandoned city, because you know everyone is in their home and you know that the city is still quite dense and filled, but the streets are empty and no shops are open. So it was very strange. I want to ask you, in Oroville, did you have that similar sense of, like, so to speak, that eerie atmosphere, or was it still very calm and much more collected, I would say?
Let's put it like this. I think in the beginning, when the government directives needed to be complied, there was a sense of restlessness because it was a sudden shift in terms of movement, freedom, staying at home. So there were some initial reactions to it. And Oroville also has, apart from following government directives, also pays attention to the spiritual understanding of these situations itself, of how we respond to viruses, how we have the right attitude in these movements. So I think it's quite a difficult dance between a spiritual community, the nation, and the state. Mm. When this kind of pandemic hits, something like India, Tamil Nadu, and Oroville, where all are impacted at the same time. In my humble assessment, people in Oroville responded quite well. I think they were conscious. They were actually trying their best to follow the necessary precautions. Just because there is some raging debates on Oronet does not mean that people were taking it, most of the people were not taking it lightly. There was a clear, sincere step to do whatever was needed for the adult population and the child population. I feel it has been quite a balanced way of trying our best as a spiritual community to dance through this pandemic, which is not yet even halfway over. We are just in the center of it right now.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that really well-faceted response. I would like to now ask you or like discuss about community spirit. So in relation to this, I'd like to say that there is this common belief that is well backed by evidence that the stress of disaster has a tendency to bring people together. So related to this, I'd like to read a short excerpt, two excerpts from an article titled Disasters and Crises Bring Out the Best in Us. It's written by Rutger Bregman, who is a very renowned historian and an activist for universal basic income. So back in March, so a few months ago, Rutger wrote, "Sure, our news feeds are flooded with cynical stories and comments. A report on armed men stealing rolls of toilet paper in Hong Kong, or about the Australian woman who got into a fist fight in a Sydney supermarket. In moments like these, it's tempting to conclude that people are selfish and egoistical, but nothing could be further from the truth. For every antisocial jerk out there, there are thousands of doctors, cleaners, and nurses working around the clock on our behalf. For every panicky hoarder shoving the entire supermarket shelves into their cart, there are 10,000 people doing their very best to prevent the virus from spreading further." He continues to write, "The surge in solidarity that we're seeing will come as no surprise to most sociologists. The current situation has obvious similarities to the human response to natural disasters, which has been researched extensively for decades. News reports following a natural disaster are almost always dominated by stories of looting and violence. But in many cases, such stories turn out to be unfounded speculations based on rumor. Since 1963, the University of Delaware's Disaster Research Center has conducted nearly 700 field studies on floods and earthquakes. And on-site research reveals the same result every single time. The vast majority of people stay calm and help each other." And then he continues to note, "Whatever the extent of looting," one sociology notes, "it always pales in significance to the widespread altruism that leads to free and massive giving and sharing of goods and services." So the last statement, again, I'll repeat, massive giving and sharing of goods and services, as B would agree, is exactly what the Aura platform is trying to facilitate with the introduction of this virtual platform / mobile app. I've said this before, excuse me for my repetition, I'll say it again. The time couldn't be better on our side to introduce a solution, a technologically driven solution, and something so innovative as like this to the community. So I'd love to ask you all now, who've been in the community during this crisis and who've also had to endure through the lockdown period, has the collective community spirit been revived through this lockdown? How about you first take this answer, this question, Colette?
See, it always happens with Auroville. Whenever there is an emergency situation, they come together, they perform miracles. It is really fantastic. And by the way, we are of course in a very difficult situation, but it's nothing compared to what Auroville already went through for years when he was fighting against the Cherubindo society. So at that time, there were really moments when there was nothing to eat. And they were eating peanuts, they were eating roots. And I give you an example. Dr. Kamla Tiwari, who was a doctor in the Indian Army, married to a general, they were still living at the ashram. And so they invited the daughter with her husband to come to have a meal. They refused to eat, say we cannot eat anything because our brother and sister in Auroville are starving. So, but these peaks really happen with emergencies. I was born at the end of World War II. My family was working with the partisans. So, and I think at that time so different precisely because I had this kind of experience. But after a few years, when things start getting normal, money flows, the economy starts again, the people become again the ordinary type. So I hope it will not happen also this time with Auroville, because right now there is really this feeling of solidarity, self-abnegation, working all these volunteers, people that I never seen before, and they come every day. Let's see what happened after. Because, by the way, unfortunately, now it's nothing. The worst is still to come. And by the way, Bondi now is isolated. There is no access to Bondi.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yes, you're right. I mean, we are still, like Vikram mentioned earlier, we're still in the middle of it. We don't know exactly what's to come and if we have reached a peak or what second wave will hit us, right? I'd like to ask you, because last time in our last episode with Julian, you mentioned that it really led the community to wake up and become also entrepreneurial and very innovative and very also collective. So according to you, what is like the most touching collective effort that you've seen so far during this period in Oroville?
Probably I would call it the local food movement. You saw immediately people, I don't say they were really seriously worried, but they were concerned and they understood that our food supply is coming from outside. And Oroville wants to be this self-sustaining town. It wants to be a place where, you know, we can take care of things. But we know that only 15% of our food that we're actually growing. So people are aware of these things. And so when this hit, and there were some shortages, but people turned to this process of circle gardens. So I think in the last few weeks, about 17 gardens have started in communities.
Wow.
And they come through Solitude. Krishna in Solitude has supported this. And then there's also another movement to eat the local food. Not only the local food, but the local weeds. So there's so much healthy food growing right in our backyards. And actually people pull out some weeds to grow spinach that is less nutritious than the weeds they pulled out.
Wow.
So we start to find out, you know, where we're living and people connect to the earth. So when they connect to each other and we connect to the earth, good things happen. And we see a lot of examples of that. One more example I can give is the waste. Because the waste couldn't be picked up because mostly employees were involved in picking up the waste. So there was nobody to go and get the waste. So in many communities, it piled up. It made the people there realize that they have to sort their waste. They have to be more conscious. And so then we volunteers at Eco Service started coming. And then we saw what was happening. We interacted with the community. The community started taking steps to understand about their waste, how we can reutilize this, and we shouldn't be doing any landfill. We should be, you know, recycling and upcycling everything. So that consciousness hit home, which wouldn't have hit home if we didn't have our coronavirus. So like you said, we are preparing for the next step. This pandemic has given Oroville and the world a shot that our economies and our systems really need to be overhauled and become more humanistic, to say the least.
Yes. I read an article the other day about just the impact of COVID-19 in the world, and this author wrote it in a very beautiful way. He said the silver lining to all of this is that the future has been pulled earlier. Like, we've had to pull those futures closer to us, right? Something that may have been super distant is now closer to us, and that is definitely a big plus. And regarding the agricultural sector, B, I agree. I think this is something I also learned a bit much more, like last year when I was in Oroville often. I would hear like, why are we trying to get strawberries in Oroville when that's obviously not, we don't have the climate to grow something like that. And funny enough, that like the very last episode I recorded was with three Oroville youth. So they're still in the Oroville education system. So from two students from law school and one from future school. And one of the students said, why are people not going out of their comfort zone to eat the produce and food that is locally sourced? And like, why are people going to Nilgiri's to buy like Italian pasta when in fact there's Italian pasta, like let's say Tanto or many, also a couple of other units produced. So it was actually so touching to hear from such a young generation comments like that or sentiments like that being shared. Because rest assured, when I was 15 or 16, I wasn't thinking about anything about local sourcing or how to promote the local economy. So it's really beautiful to see this this level of social consciousness coming from the younger generations. So Vikram, what are your thoughts on this in terms of like, how do you feel that the community has come together more collectively during this period?
It's a bit difficult to start the sentence with community has or community has not, because I can't speak for such a volume of people in the community. That wouldn't be a sweeping statement.
Yeah.
What I can tell you is in the small cluster of people that I associate with, or in the situations where the people I have met, I'm not so sure whether they have come together. There is some intent of solidarity. Something is touching them. There is a realignment of the priorities right now. Before it was other things, distracting from the spirit itself. Now it has come down to basic things. Food, should we stock up? How do we maybe plan so that collectively small things can be done, picking up a shopping bag? It's very subtle. It's very nuanced and subtle, these movements of solidarity are.
Yeah.
I fully welcome it. I think this crushing circumstance needs to prolong a little bit more. I think Paulette is spot on many times that it's almost like the hand of Kali in these moments. Whatever needs to be broken down, whatever needs to be dealt with will be dealt, and hopefully something new will emerge after.
Yeah. Thank you
for
sharing.
It's a bit difficult to say that right now.
Yeah. Paulette, so Vikram just mentioned that certain priorities have become much more clear, right? So what are certain priorities that you feel like have been reestablished during this period? Because you've been working so extensively on gathering different types of different sources of information to produce these reports that are sent off to Science Walden. So during this work, was there anything that became clear to you in terms of, okay, now the community is aware that this is our top three priority, for example?
So I think the community will be hit more harder. And then the waking up will be the real one. Mm. So far, the economy has nothing to do with the economy that the mother wanted. The mother wanted a self-sufficient town of 50,000 people, which should have been a model to the whole world. So self-sufficient with food, self-sufficient financially, self-sufficient also in terms of industries, producing all the things needed for the day-to-day life, and even all the material construction. She even wanted a factory of cements. It was never understood because it was a creation of the 60s. And so there was, this anarchic feeling, nature and so on, but the concept of the ideal society was not there. It's happening now forcefully because the economy which we have built is largely based on tourism, and this is completely gone. So now, as the only thing we have done in the right sense for is agriculture and farming, they're turning towards this because it's the real achievement, but the other setup is not there. And this is what will have to happen. Because we have been pampered all these years, you know, because the ideal is beautiful, human unity is beautiful. Then the government of India was helping financially, the VI volunteers, well-wisher was helping. Now, these people, I mean, the governments, the government of India, the nation, the people themselves have problems to survive. And it will get worse and worse. In fact, it will be even worse than during World War II. Because this is even contagious, and this is what makes the difference. So our will be forced to reinvent the economy, which was the economy the mandate wanted.
Mm. Yes.
And then this is really Mahakali. But the difference is that when the mother founded Auroville, she founded when the economy was excellent. Even Italy, you know, it was the economic boom. And so it was from the top, you know, the top of consciousness, the intellectual, the students, the university professor, what we call the aristocrats, working class, you know, from the height. Now it will start from the bottom. And then, you know, I spent hours reading the international news. I'm fully aware of what's happening in the United States. I'm fully aware of the Black Lives
Matter.
Matter. I'm fully aware of the looting, of the riots, of the police. I'm fully aware of what's happening in Seattle. This is the future. You know, but it's really Mahakali. If we are not able to do it properly, then something terrible will happen. And then we have to start civilization from scratch. And then it will be the real thing. And it's fantastic that is happening in the United States. But as things are going badly here also, it will happen here also.
Yeah. Speaking of happening here also, so when I was younger, Auroville always felt like a protected bubble. So I traveled a lot, even in my youth. I would always go back to Korea every summer to see my father. And then I would come back to Auroville and was this always safe haven. So I never really felt that Auroville was touched or severely affected by the events of the so-called real world. For example, I don't know personally to what extent Auroville was affected by the global financial crisis in 2007 to 2008. But having returned to the community at a more mature age and also extensively trying to learn about Auroville's economy, I realized that Auroville is a microcosm, and that's like a term that we hear often in Auroville, that it does reflect so many of the real world problems that we see, whether it be prejudice or bias or inequality. So we also have that in Auroville, right? So with this in mind, I am assuming that a global crisis that has led to such an unprecedented amount of public anxiety and fear, like also Auroville as a community, to a certain extent must be feeling that. So that brings me to my next question to all three of you. What are some major concerns that communities members are having right now amidst this outbreak? Or so, B, would you like to take this question first?
Sure. I think, I mean, it, in my limited experience, as Vikram says, you know, it's very, very useless to make sweeping statements about Auroville because there are many other people who will contradict exactly what you said.
Very true. Yeah.
So, but in the circle where I am, I feel people really are taking this event as a grace. Let's call it a grace, in the sense that this is the time for all of us to wake up personally. So I can see some changes I've made in my own life just as a result of it. And I don't think people are pessimistic or have a kind of dystopian or any kind of negative future view. I think basically the evolutionary energy of humanity is you know, moving. So there are going to be disasters. I think psychologically the financial collapse and the things that will come, the, you know, maybe there'll be a lot of serious issues around the world. People will be able to, you know, they will be with it. They'll be supporting what is, what the positive part, and they will not be devastated by what's happening. Because we have in Auroville, of course, we have that deep spirituality that is founded on life. So that's a tremendous advantage that we have in Auroville, and we have each other. And we have such diversity and such richness in the culture here that this is, you know, the best place to be when things are, you know, crumbling. And obviously they are crumbling. But I haven't found. I mean, there may be people in Oroville who are panicked or whatever, but I have not found them. And it has not touched me personally. I mean, negative things have not touched me. I've seen only the, you know, the better things happening. And as people simplify and it all feels like the way we should have gone years ago. I mean, I relate to what Paulette said. In the early years, it was a little bit tough when the food wasn't there. And we had the big clash and the police were beating us up and the gundas. That was very difficult. But you see, the present group has not experienced that. So we're in another aura now. There's only Paulette, myself, and a few pioneers who know these old stories. And we don't want to keep going back to them. The new Oroville is being born. And people like you, Denby, are such hopeful lights for the future. And we have, you know, we have that incredible thing happening now with the new generation. And they're doing their work. They're making it happen. I mean, just think of what the Aura platform will mean. It's something incredible. And I don't think even Oroville-ians are suspect what this was going to do, you know, for them and also for the world.
Yes.
So it's happening. So that is a tremendous news.
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes only sense, that you haven't been surrounded by any negativity or skepticism, because you as a person, I would give you the nickname Optimus Prime, you know, and of course you're surrounded by people who are also very positive and see the good and see the light in the situation. So I'm really glad that you're taking on that attitude or embodying that spirit, especially during these unsettling times, and that the people around you are behaving in the same way. I would like to ask you, Paulette, do you have any personal concerns? Because based on the research that you've been doing right now, any concerns that come to mind, you're like, ooh, I'm worried that Oroville may potentially go this way. Or do you feel more closely to what B just expressed?
See, my approach, as I come not just from the ashram, but by being so close to some major sadhak and scholars, I always interpret everything from the point of view of integral yoga. So I might look like a fool, but to me what's happening now is a grace. It's really the last chance. It's not when things like this happen, it's because really there was no other way to stop the blockage. Then it's a bomb has to be thrown. If we had been more receptive, it would have not been necessary. But that is not just out of it. See, it's the reaction to globalization, to neoliberalism. My generation, society, the working class, was coming first. Now this is completely obliterated. You know, I really see the difference of generation. Just think about the Yellow Vest in France, what they did. Ecology is for the rich. They were reacted against that. So we go back again to the ideal society. Of course we want organic food, of course we want ecology, but we want for everybody, not just for an elite. And so you have to go where we are going now, where everything, absolutely everything is collapsing. The only one who are getting richer, of course, are the multi-billionaire. But everybody else, even the middle class, the small entrepreneur, are collapsing.
Yes.
And the same thing is also happening in Oroville. So there is an awakening of consciousness. What's happening now, it has started in France, then and now it's happening in USA. The same thing has to happen in Oroville. We have to understand. And then to go back, that the only way to overcome this is really what the mother talks about, the minimum needs, the minimum material needs. The more you are advanced spiritually, the less your material needs. And if you had seen how the early sadhak live, they did not even have the bathroom. They had to cross a yard under the monsoon to go to the bathroom. They were just living in bliss. So it's really a blessing, but It's like turning our people upside down. It's very hard. You cannot expect this happening in one day. But it will happen because it's a matter of survival. There is no way out.
Yes. I'm very touched and by what you said. I wholeheartedly agree with this. So for that, you get a clap. Thank you for sharing, Paulette. For me also, it's tough. I was having this conversation with Cecilia and Aisha, who also grew up in Oroville, and we've all three of us have been living abroad for a long time after leaving the community. And living in a very urban setting, it's so hard to not have materialistic desires, because human behavior, I fundamentally believe, is shaped by cues that like you have within your environment, by society. And if you have cues, whether it be social media or just the expectations in the workplace or expectations within your peer groups to dress better, to own XYZ things, to have a bigger house, to like reassert your social status and your social worth, it's so hard to escape that materialistic desire. And then we all agreed on that call that Oroville is so special because it never exerted that level of social pressure on us. You know, we never felt like we had to get those things to feel like we are doing something for the community, that we are being valued by society. So I agree that Oroville, getting back to what Bea said, is one of the best places to be amidst this crisis in terms of really embracing the awakening that Paulette referred to and just seeing how we can grow from this. Yeah. How about you, Vikram? Do you have, and I really like, I just, before I ask you the question, I wanted to say, I really appreciate the fact that you mentioned that from your personal experience and perspective, you can share your thoughts, because I also don't want to generalize the community-wide perception or the community-wide tendencies, because there is so much diversity in Oroville, so you cannot do that. So thank you for making that distinction and making that clarification. So do you have any personal concerns from your side? Vikram?
Yes, I do. I'm going to look at that concern. I'm going to set the tone by saying I'm going to look at that concern as a necessary event that needs to happen, and then something will emerge after that. My concern is, as part of the economic meltdown, there is a substantial worker population who are working in Oroville's unit services, domestic households, and in forests. When the money starts to run out in the units and services and in independent households and forests, you will be unable to pay salaries and wages. You can only pay for that long. If you have contingencies, then you'll have to use up contingencies and buffers. We can survive. We will be okay, even if we run out of money like that. But those people from the villages will start to get a little desperate. I'm facilitating two very difficult conversations between units and workers, where they are laying off workers. It's not easy. But it has to be done with a kind of compassion and clarity and in an Orwellian way, so to speak. Yes. And this is going to, if the lockdown prolongs a little bit more, it will go through a phase of people getting angry, some people getting a little bit of flustering inside because of, lack of income. It will go through. I don't want to elaborate too much right now. But for Oroville, it is not necessarily a bad thing. For Oroville, it will put the onus back on Orovillians to start working.
Yes.
Right now, there is also a lot of people who enjoy saying a lot, but actually, even in our generation, Danby, yes. I am probably middle child, you're younger, and they are the older ones. But even in my generation, it's a lot of talkers and very less actually doers.
Yes.
When it comes to concrete action. So I think time will come for us to also step in, your generation and my generation, to actually step down into the matter itself and start to work hard on different things necessary.
Yes.
So I feel
Aura, the value we create together.